Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Yes, hello, and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every week, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history, taken from the definitive AEW Match Guide, as ranked by over 30 wrestling commentators from around the internet wrestling community. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe and rate it on your podcast app of choice, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network that cover all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. My guest for today is a writer for my old website, Wrestling Headlines, Lords of Pain, Joey G. And we are looking at Shaq and Jade Cargill versus Cody Rhodes and Red Velvet from Dynamite on the 3rd of March, 2021. How are you going today, Joey?
Oh, Sam, I'm doing wonderful, my friend. It's been a very, very exciting lead up and a beautiful intro to get us started on our chats today. I'm so happy to be on this podcast. I was just telling you before we started, like, I think you guys have been doing some great analysis and deep dives on the show, and I'm excited to talk about this one today.
Oh, cheers, mate. You're too kind. You're too kind. I appreciate it. Now, as I do for all of my guests here on the Match Guide podcast, Joey, for the people who don't know you out there, I'm curious, how did you get interested in AEW?
Well, you know, I reinvigorated my wrestling fandom back in about 2014. And to keep a long story short, I started writing for some online publications around 2015, 2016. And during that time, I finally was able to branch out and start watching wrestling that was non-WWE related, like really finding my deep dive, the niche of like New Japan, even old school All Japan, Ring of Honor. And I saw these guys, these group that was, you know, igniting the conversation threads all over the place, which was Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and the Elite. So I started watching these guys and started watching these matchups, especially I think the first Omega matchup I ever watched to even get this guy on my radar was his Wrestle Kingdom match against Okada, obviously that classic one at 11, and going, wow, this is something different. This is something unique. And like this kind of excites me in a different way that WWE had not been doing in a while. So like became a deep rooted fan there, and watching them slowly morph and, you know, announce All In and build this thing up to the point where when the company was announced, like I was like, this is going to be my main squeeze. And I even told our boss over at Wrestling Headlines that I would happily start covering this beat because I wanted to be covering this promotion from the ground up and seeing where they took off. So I've been an AEW fan since the very beginning, since prior to the promotion beginning, and I will continue to be an AEW fan as time goes on, because I think that they have proven that they are as entertaining as they promised.
It's interesting as well, you brought up how you've covered this for Wrestling Headlines and also written for other websites around the IWC. Being a writer on one of those sites, of course, one of the biggest drivers of what you're doing and what you're looking at is how many clicks things get. Uh-huh. And I know from myself from writing, sometimes you really want to write about something that's outside of WWE, because of course WWE is the monolith in pro wrestling that it drives the majority of traffic to any of these websites. But obviously if you're into other things, it's fun to try and write about those things, particularly, you know, from my point, from a columnist perspective, when you're giving your opinion, you sometimes want to talk about these things that are really interesting but aren't necessarily in the WWE. And the guys from the Elite, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, for a long time they were the only thing that would draw outside of WWE. They would draw,
yeah, 100.
You could write something about like Okada Tanahashi, you could write something about you know, as you said, like All Japan or something else that's going on, and thankfully it does seem like more things are getting through the bubble these days, you know, in 2022, but certainly, you know, in the late 2010s, when I was writing as well, it was basically, if you wanted people to look at your stuff, it was WWE or these guys. Mm-hmm. But that just shows how, you know, you've got things like Ring of Honor, you've got Impact, big names, companies with a lot of money behind them, but it was these guys that were drawing attention and getting that sort of cultural cachet, if you will.
100% agree. You know, it was a kind of a mindset. I think what I was trying to say before was that they've earned my trust. Because as I fell in love with wrestling about back in 2014, which was mainly due because of the network launching, and I was like, oh, I have access to watch all this old wrestling, even WCW, which I was a WCW kid. Like, I have access to watch all this old stuff. So I was like, that's cool. I'll go back and watch the stuff that I like to watch as a kid. And then started watching the weekly product and started learning about these new characters and then revisiting. And like, I fell down a deep WWE wormhole to a point where I didn't want to watch anything else because in my mind, it was like the NFL and the XFL. Like, this is the company that's doing it professionally. Anything else is second tier. And I feel so silly saying that now because it's really not the case. Like, pro wrestling has never been that way. Like, you could stamp the WWE name on the product. It doesn't mean that people that don't work there are not still pretty, you know, exceptional at the job of pro wrestling. And that was a hard mindset. It's why I would never watch early days TNA. And now I'm patting myself on the back because I get to revisit all of these early day TNA stuff that are like really fucking wonderful, like young AJ Styles, young Kazarian, younger Christian Cage, like all of this great, great wrestling that I had missed out on. And that was the thing of like this guy, Kenny Omega, I had heard of. And when I finally watched that Okada match, I mean, yes, you know, I dropped in at a very good time to learn about Kenny Omega, but still learning about it, I was like, my gosh, this guy has lived up to the hype. This guy is a phenomenal storyteller. And this guy surrounded with his group of people are looking at and displaying wrestling in a way that I had never seen before, that I didn't know was possible. And I think as I fell back in love with WWE, you know, I was a big fan of guys like Cesaro or other like great workhorse guys where, you know, I think you fantasy book so much in your own mind that WWE kept constantly disappointing. I was like, they just seem like they don't want to take a chance. It seemed very safe to the point where it was so predictable, but not like the fun predictability you get like when you go see an MCU movie. It was predictable to the point where it's like it felt lazy, and that just makes me tired and uninterested. And I've never felt that way about AEW. I haven't felt that way about a lot of. And this isn't even to say that I'm like anti-WWE. I still enjoy watching the WWE product for what it is. But the sensation, that feeling I get of the thing, the reason that I love covering this sport as a journalist is AEW really delivers on that. I feel like on all fronts.
Absolutely. And this is a really interesting match that you've picked to do because in many ways it's not the sort of thing they regularly do. It isn't a lane they've driven in a whole lot, but it's something that they have been dabbling in every now and again. And I think they pulled off with varying degrees of success in this venture here. So we are, of course, talking about Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill versus Cody Rhodes and Red Velvet from Dynamite on the 3rd of March, as I said before. Now, as we do here on the podcast, I'm going to give this match its flowers. Unfortunately, there's not very many. Dave Meltzer did not rate this match. So we don't have anything from Big Papa Dave. The guys at Cage Match have rated it 6.18 currently. I don't see that going higher or lower anytime soon.
No, I think that's a moderately accurate rating for this matchup. I feel like that is right where it's supposed to.
Yeah. And on the definitive match guide, when we put that together in 2021, this came in 53rd. So it just missed the cutoff for the top 50 that we ended up publishing. But it was just there. It did get a few votes, but a handful of votes, just not enough to make the top 50. So I guess my question for you is, of all the matches we could have done, why did you pick this one?
Well, I think, you know, there is an excitement level sometimes to things that AEW does. And there's something about Shaquille O'Neal, you know, as a big fan of basketball, there's something about this guy that is just, you just look at him and he just radiates charm. He radiates charisma. You know, he was one of those basketball stars where he's a big dude, but there's a lot of big dudes in the NBA. But his personality was as big as he was and as dominant as he was on the court. Like, I understand why Hollywood was like, we need to give this guy his own movie. And then Steel came out and everyone said, that was a terrible idea. Why are we giving this guy his own movie? There's a thing about Shaq where, you know, no matter what he does, even in some of his outdated takes on the NBA as an analyst that he works for on NBA on TNT, the guy still has it. He has that it factor in a sense of, I want to watch what he does. I want to hear what he says. And I want to watch him squash some tiny fools in the ring. So I think the reason I chose this matchup was because for a celebrity matchup in wrestling, we had just come off a pretty good one too with Bad Bunny at WrestleMania. But I think that Shaq perfectly lives in the type of big man mentality, like both old school and new school, that works for a wrestler. Like a guy his size, you don't need to do much. And I think that he did everything as good as he could have done it in the time allotted, to a point where I was thoroughly, thoroughly entertained by this matchup. You know, this is a go home show with Dynamite. We're building up towards Revolution. We got this exploding barbed wire death match. This tag match potentially could have been on this show, but they wanted to do a big TV rating, which I believe they did, you know, break over a million for this episode. And, you know, opening the show, doing it live, like I think it could have been so easy for them to just tape this and then, like, you know, cut and edit around it. And, you know, got give credit to Cody on this one because it's a live match and they delivered. Like the fans that were attending at Daly's Place thought the match was great, just in sense of like in terms of reaction. They hit all of their big spots. We got Shaq getting slammed. We got Shaq doing power bombs. We got Shaq going through a table. I think for what this was, they hit a home run. Now, is this going to be like, could I walk you through spot by spot of the matchup? Like, oh, it was crazy when Shaq, you know, did a 450. Like, obviously, we're not getting any super high end big moments here. But I just thought this was such a fun time. And it's nice every once in a while to remember in wrestling to have fun.
No, absolutely. I was really excited when you picked this match because I think this match is an absolute blast. And going back and watching it for the first time, it was so fun to do. It's interesting you mentioned Shaq. One of my questions in there is, and I think you've actually done this really perfectly, is summed up what it is about Shaq. Because, you know, like I live in Australia and growing up in primary school, Australia is influenced by America. A lot of our pop culture is influenced by America. But certainly sport is not one of those areas. Basketball is a niche sport in Australia. Baseball is not something Australians have any interest in because we have a better version called cricket. We've got better versions of football as well, to be honest, rugby league and rugby union now. But growing up in Australia, we knew who the Bulls were because, of course, we knew who the – well, this is in the late 90s. Of course, we knew who the Bulls were, and we knew who Shaq was. I didn't actually know anything about, like, how Shaq played, but I knew his name. I knew Shaquille O'Neal. I knew he played for the Magic. And that was, like, that's a pretty impressive thing that this is a guy who, you know, culturally crossed over in a land where, you know, to kids, in a land where we don't really care about basketball
the
that sport, much.
That's the thing.
That level of celebrity and that level of charisma and charm that he has, because you know there's so many big men in the NBA. He is one of the big ones, of course, but
yes,
he is more than just a big hunk of man.
I agree. I was actually going to ask you because I was excited because I know in Australia basketball is not like as popular as it is in many other countries because Australia has got their niche of sports that they love, cricket being one of them.
Hey, cricket's niche sport, man. Second biggest sport in the world.
niche in a sense that it's so popular that there's Americans that refuse to understand that there's more sports than just in America. But I'm happy that you could sort of unveil that there is something about Shaq that did translate over because Shaq in terms of his basketball skill was very dominant because he's a big guy. You know, like he goes in there, he works with his body, he destroyed many a backboards with like a very powerful slam. But there are other big guys in the NBA. You know, there's, put it this way, there are many giant Gonzalez's in the NBA. You know, there's very few, dare I say, like Vaders or Brock Lesnar's in the NBA that can translate both in terms of physical basketball skill and on court or and off court charisma and things like that. Like you wanted to see Shaq get on the microphone and cut a promo. That's the other reason I really like this match buildup, is because that AEW's, you know, with Warner Media and on TNT, Shaq is promoting this match on NBA on TNT. And it's just funny because you could tell it's one of those, you know, very WWE things where when they bring in a celebrity, they give them a big skeleton script of everything they want the celebrity to do. Tyson Fury was a good example of that. I was like, this dude can talk, but they're going to probably make him say their A to Z WWE promo script. Shaq on NBA and TNT is just like, he's just casually, you know, being like, Cody Rhodes is a cupcake. I'm going to smash him. Like, you know, this Cody Rhodes makes this Lakers team, you know, look like all-stars. And I hate this Lakers team. Just like being able to riff like that and being so natural at just understanding the fact that you're selling this match is just great. He also punches like a piece of plexiglass and he's like, Cody Rhodes, that'll be you. And the other guys are like, Shaq, you just punched plexiglass. Like, calm down, bro. This isn't that big of a deal. All of this, I'm like, God, this is just so dumb, fun entertainment. Like, this is this whole thing. I know this is a silly comparison. Reminds me of like a Fast and the Furious movie. Like, there, it's just all over the place. It doesn't have to seem real to me because it's fun. And again, I do think in this age, it is important to remember, like, there are times I always refer to pro wrestling. I feel like I could talk about pro wrestling the same way like Michelangelo could talk about like a piece of art. Like, I feel like there is a way to talk about wrestling in a deeper sense on a more meaningful level. But at the end of the day, there are points where I'm like, this is entertainment. And this is exactly what this match was. This was the most like sports entertainment-y feel that I think AEW had done at that time.
Yeah. Now we are going to sort of walk through the build to this match a little bit. I think it's fair to say it probably wasn't the cleanest of builds, and for varying reasons, some of which are beyond AEW's control. We'll go from the start. It did start on Dynamite back in 2020, actually. There was a segment when Jade Cargill debuted. Very impressive look. Cutting off a Cody promo, only for Brandi to run out and dropping that now infamous line, who told you it was open mic night, bitch? which has now become, I don't know, it became like sort of a signature for Brandi at some point.
Oh, my gosh. It got memed very quickly.
Yeah. And then it was revealed in a video segment in the following weeks that Cody Rhodes and Brandi would have to answer to Jade and Shaq. So huge announcement there, of course, as we've already talked a lot about Shaq and his cultural cachet that he's got. This wasn't the first time that he'd been involved in wrestling, of course. He'd been involved in the Andre the Giant Battle Royale, and I know Big Show was really trying to get him to have a match at WrestleMania at one point. What did you think of the initial interactions and the idea of Jade and Shaq versus Cody and Brandi?
Well, I thought, you know, like, I think because I'm so embedded into like the pro wrestling journalism, you know, like having to have these updates for the site, like we know that Shaq is coming in. It's being built up. We know backstage they're talking about bringing him in. And I thought Jade kills this, you know, opening promo. Like, she came out of nowhere. I don't think anyone anticipated that Shaq's involvement with AEW was going to be in like this mixed tag type of setup. So I think Jade from the get-go shined right from the very beginning. And she does like a very, very nice buildup of he is coming, dropping Shaq's name. And it's like, okay, this is the direction that they're going. So I think this thing started out very well. I do think the road to this eventual matchup gets very complicated. We sort of lose some of the excitement to the build. Which I think then goes away once Shaq makes that initial appearance and does that nice flex in his nice black tank top. I think it all the build lives up to that. But, you know, there's also a lot of snags that they hit along the way. Like, obviously, I really feel bad for Brandi in this situation because this was going to be a good program for her. She hasn't really been featured as a wrestler very much. You know, she did great work with the company as a CBO, and I know she was really trying to work her way and earn the fans' respect in terms of her in-ring stuff. But this is when she got pregnant, so she had to pull out from the match. And it sucks because this was a big program for her as well as just for Cody and for Shaq and for Jade.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for Brandi. Her run in AEW really's sort of been touched with a sense of misfortune.
Yeah, and, I would 100% agree.
Like, she's a divisive character in the IWC, but I think she has had a bad run of luck nonetheless, yeah. And I do feel sorry for her. She initially was starting out with the Kong thing, the Awesome Kong thing, and turns out Kong really wasn't able to go at the level that they needed and the level that Kong felt comfortable with, and so they had to pull the pin on that. And the reaction, of course, to the Nightmare Collective wasn't great either. And then the pandemic hit. She wasn't really wrestling throughout the pandemic. And then this was probably going to be her big moment of sort of getting back in the ring and getting back in front of a crowd, and got pregnant. And of course, that's brilliant for them. They were obviously very happy for that to happen, but it's just not a opportune moment and opportune timing. And it's the same for this program, I guess. It did sort of halt the program, and it was like, okay, what are we going to do? You know, like almost like record scratch.
Right. Yes.
Thankfully they found Red Velvet, mm-hmm. who was not someone we'd seen previously on AEW TV, but she came in as kind of billed as Brandy's protege, and she would come to Cody's aid, staring down Jade after Jade slapped Cody in one of their many backstage programs. What did you think of Red Velvet's inclusion?
I mean, I think Red Velvet was the best choice, and I think it kind of gets solidified because Red Velvet and Jade have very good chemistry, I believe, inside the ring. Like, besides this tag match, I think they've wrestled twice before. Both times it was one of, I think, Jade's better showings. Like, I think when you mesh very well with an opponent that knows how to take your offense, it creates that chemistry and that trust, and you could see that they both sort of felt that along the way, especially since these two kind of carry the load of the match going through. Like, the Shaq spots are great, but they are, you know, upon our rewatch when I got ready to talk to you today, I realized how Shaq is maybe only involved about 30-40% in the actual matchup. Like, the women are taking the brunt of the time, which is exciting and a great spot for Red Velvet, and I thought she showed up and like cemented her spot in the division very much for the matchup. So that's another reason I like this match. I think it was successful on all fronts. Like, we got enough out of Shaq to be entertaining. You know, Cody got to have his nice moments, but Red Velvet and Jade, I really feel like got the rub in a positive way. Seeing where we are now, you know, Jade is still this undefeated phenomenon in the women's division. You know, it's the first ever TBS champion. And Red Velvet has had her moments. You know, she got to challenge Britt for the world title. She's gotten to have some marquee matches on TV. So I do think that this match was successful in trying to do the buildup of young stars or different stars sense, which is another reason why I do like the matchup. Mm.
Yeah, of course, the rest of the buildup happened across sort of like a hodgepodge of video packages, showcasing Jade and Shaq, and then Cody and Brandy and Red Velvet. Mm-hmm. There was some live segments on Dynamite, including the one-time-only dentist waiting room, which sort of fell apart. There was probably a few too many things trying to go on in that one segment.
It's a shame we didn't get a full-on series of the dentist waiting room.
Yeah,
I mean, who knows what they could have done? You know what I mean?
I think I think it was for the best, given what actually happened. I think they had someone dark in the lead up to that people did like, but it sort of fell apart in this one because I'll try to do too many things at once. And then there was, of course, the media appearances from Shaq, where he called Cody the cupcake and he said slap the plexiglass, and you know, just being Shaq.
I will criticize AEW here. They could have sold so many Cody cupcake t-shirts. Like, literally make the man a cupcake, put him on a shirt, and have like Shaq be eating the cupcake. Like, brilliant. Yeah. You're welcome, AEW. I continue to give you t-shirt ideas.
Yeah. look, I think overall the build up to this was a bit of a mess.
would agree, but it also, it's one of those things where it doesn't feel, because AEW is so good, I believe, at this long form storytelling. This was one of those things where I felt like I could turn my brain off and sort of enjoy. Like, I wasn't even watching the matchup. Like, I'm not watching for work rate as much like when I'm watching, you know, two pros in there.
So we get to the match, because that is where things get on the rails in a very quick manner. Cody comes out to out first, of course, to his version of Kingdom that's got Snoop Dogg taking a verse in it. Now, I completely forgotten about this whole thing. this is the first time we've brought it up on the it's come across on the podcast. What do you think the Snoop Dogg version of Cody's theme?
It's not good. I think Cody needs to apologize to Snoop for even like bothering him probably on his day off and being like, you know, I'm the American Nightmare, man. I need some pop. And Snoop is like, oh, stop fucking calling me at 2 a.m. and I will come do this thing for you. Yeah, not my favorite. Not my favorite theme. You know, this is start like sort of the beginning a little bit of Cody going off the rails. Mm. And sort of, you know, you had mentioned the phrase, the Cody verse. This is sort of where Cody sort of kickstarts, or should I say gets the first Infinity Stone for his Cody verse, because this is one of those things where it really feels very unlike and out of AEW. And, you know, if he had a vision for what this company is supposed to be, it's vastly different than what anyone else, I think, understood that it should be. So it's weird. I did not like that. This was one of those many instances where I was like, what are you doing, Cody? Like, what are you trying to accomplish here at some point?
I kind of get why he did it, because like, if you can get Snoop Dogg to do an entrance song for you, hell yeah, you do that. Like, of course you do that. But man, mashing it up with the existing one, I would question anyone's music taste who honestly thought that was a
great... Like, there's no way he's listening to that song and being like, oh yeah, I'm going to play this shit when I go on a run later. Like, no, absolutely not. This is a one-time-only version of this song that we will hopefully never have to hear again.
Yeah, and then Red Velvet's the second one out. I love how when she comes out, she, like, owns the stage, but then Cody sort of comes over and has... like almost whispers in her ear, and you can tell that he's like saying, this is your moment. Like, you're not meant to be here to steal the show, but if you pull this off, you can make yourself in this moment. And you can see the fire in her eyes, particularly after Cody has that whisper in her ear, when she's taking the center stage, taking the camera, and just really doing her best to steal what is going to be a match that is focused on the two people who are about to enter in, which is, of course, Jade, who comes out looking absolutely incredible in black and gold. She has such – like, her presentation has been one of the great things that AEW has done for a new wrestler in particular.
Like, I 100% agree. Mm-hmm.
The theme song just feels so epic with the Mikey Ruckus guitar, and then she puts her – ring gear together so well, always looks absolutely spectacular, everything in its place, and debuts with black and gold looks fantastic.
They make her seem like a superstar. Like, this is her first showing, and they're telling you this girl is going to be an important pivotal part of our women's division, and it felt that way from the beginning.
And then of course Shaq comes out, and Shaq is the kind of big guy that makes big people look small. Like, if you or I stood next to Cody Rhodes, we'd be like, that's a big dude.
But that's a big dude. He's quite thick.
Absolutely dwarfs Cody Rhodes. and he dwarfs Jade Cargill. You get a great picture of Jade like looking up behind this with this looming lump of man.
He's got the big old flex. Oh my gosh, yeah, it's just wonderful. I think the thing that just puts a smile thinking about it is he does, as Shaq's walking into the ring, he does this little like one of these to Cody.
Yeah.
And it's so just natural. Like, he doesn't, like, it's not over intense like the way Benoit used to do it. Mm. It's just a quick great thing. Sleep. And I'm like, and that's one of those like Shaq-isms that again, you cannot teach. Like, I think only he could exuberate that much charm by doing so little. And it's just, you know, like that little moment got me like, got me to that point where I was like, you know what? I feel like this is going to go off very well. Because there's like that little bit of fear sometimes you have when you're watching where you're like, God, I hope this does well for them. Like, because you want them to succeed. You want this to excel. You want everyone to look good. I think that another would have been a great t-shirt, just that Shaq pose over Jade. Oh, I was like, the two of them look awesome. They look like superheroes. And that's what you want to see. That's what you want to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The match, of course, starts with Cody and Shaq. Of course, you start with Shaq in the ring. You've got all these eyeballs on you for people who potentially are tuning in for the first time to see Shaq in the ring. Of course, you start with Shaq. Collar and elbow tie up. Cody tries to work it with his wrestling technique, but Shaq is just too powerful. Pushes him off and then gives the double biceps again. Cody then circles around the ring, and Shaq matches his pace circling around the ring before giving like some Muhammad Ali quick feet.
Oh, he's yeah.
Such a natural at this.
Yes, that's a, yeah. I mean, it's also kind of to go off of what you said, like he's also wearing these sneakers, his size 18, 19, that don't exactly match with his black ears. So it's like another thing of like, Shaq is so huge and those shoes are so loud. Mm. And that's perfect because Shaq as a pro wrestler, of course, would wear like these very exuberant giant Nikes on top of his gear. And then watching him do the Ali little quick step is just so fun. And funny, you know, big guys got moves. That was the thing that he excelled at in the NBA. Like, he's a big dude, but man, is he quick.
Hey, he was just ahead of the curve with those shoes as well. 2021 was the year that, you know, discourse around basketball shoes took over wrestling. So
He
was just ahead of the curve. And then of course we get the, you know, the moment where they get really physical and trade chops in the corner. Cody gives Shaq some, you know, gives Shaq some noise, but then Shaq just slaps the absolute bejesus out of Cody's chest. And then Cody runs at Shaq only to get elevated up for the, like, one of the biggest back body drops you're probably ever going to see. The match could have ended after these two spots. That's what we came for, right?
Oh, my God. I was so, so happy. I mean, like, those overhand chops, you know, emitted so much noise from Cody's poor chest. Even Shaq throwing some knees to Cody's guts. I was like, his big clubbing overhand to the back. Yeah. I was like, oh, he understands how to work like a big man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could have dropped the elbow, pinned him there, and I would have been like, you know what? I got what I needed. Thank you. Dynamite could have ended after that, and I would have been like, best Dynamite ever.
And I love Bryce Remsburg's reaction to the chops. He's like just clutching his own chest like he's been hit. So brilliant. Brilliant. We get a little bit more offense from Shaq, as you said, the knees and the big clubbing blows. But then Jade tags herself in, which brings in Red Velvet. And we get to see the first back and forth between these two. Jade immediately asserts herself with, a pump kick and posing to the hard cam. You know, we mentioned how Shaq is a natural. This is Jade Cargill's first proper match.
Mm-hmm.
What a natural.
Oh, my goodness.
Point of wrestling on television.
Yeah. I mean, understands that idea of playing to the crowd at the right moments and exerting yourself as a very powerful brute force. Mm. Like, you know, Red Velvet has a lot of fire, a lot of quick striking, like type of arsenal in her moves. And Jade understands, like, you know, I'm the big strong one here. Like, this runs at my pace. Even when she slows the pace down, throws on a very, very nice figure four onto Jade. And I was like, or onto Red Velvet. And I was like, look at Jade showing her ground technique. Okay, little Jade Danielson, I see you.
And Red Velvet also gets some strikes in. Big hook kick. This match, as we said, this was a match that was made to feature Shaq and debut Jade as a force. But I love that Red Velvet does get to assert herself and really she takes a chunk of this match that she wasn't necessarily entitled to. What did you think of her, firstly, her offense? Because I think this is the first time we'd seen her in AEW and her performance in this match.
I think her performance is truly exceptional. Like, she showed that, I mean, you had mentioned Cody kind of amping her up, but like, you see that fire throughout where she knows, like, this wasn't supposed to be me, but hell, I have this opportunity now. I'm going to take chance of it. You know, she hits this great moonsault spot on the outside, shows a lot of fire right into the camera, like very much a let's go. And, you know, that's the type of like kind of baby face energy that you need sometimes. It's just being like, I'm here, I'm confident, like, even if I have, some sloppiness inside the ring, like, I'm not going to let that deflect from the aura of Red Velvet, because these things happen. It happens even with some of your pros or, some of your pro male wrestlers where, you know, sequences get a little bit off timed and things like that happen. But as long as you continue to carry the aura of your character and who you are and the story of the matchup, then that's OK. I mean, that's wrestling. It's live entertainment. Things will happen. So that's where I give her the most credit is that even in the sequences that her and Jade had that were just a little bit, not even sloppy, but not as smooth as like the hook kick or some of the ground technique transitions that they had, they still were very much telling the story of like these two women do not like each other and Velvet is trying her best to show up and show out.
And they have some really good spots. I think they probably practiced this match, I imagine, in
I would agree,
in the warehouse in Georgia at some point. There's another really good moment. Of course, we mentioned the hook kick and the figure four that you brought up. There's a really great moment where Velvet goes for a crossbody off the top. Jade catches her, rolls through and hits a fallaway slam and then does a kip up. Like, just being able to pull out those sorts of things live TV, like this is high risk. They're playing on live. There's no ability for them to just sort of edit around things that might break down, but they're pulling it off and they're doing it really well. Jade and Red Velvet, they work really well in this match.
I believe it. And like I said, they only would go on to have better matches just in singles competition. Also, big special shout out to Jade because she has to set up the tables for the big table spot.
Yeah.
And you would have thought that this girl had 1,000 TLC matches. Like there was no hesitation. She knew exactly where they were. There was no nervousness in terms of setting it up. Like she gets those tables set up and then she teases sending Velvet through it. But you know, that could become one of those points, especially for your first matchup, that could feel like it would kill the momentum. And it really didn't. Like she gets them set up and instantly in terms of psychology sets up Velvet to be sent through. And I just thought, I know it's such a small, minute detail, but I thought again for her first matchup, those are one of the moments where I was like, oh, she's a pro right from the get-go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Things do start to break down a bit in the match when Cody charges across the ring, knocking Shaq off the apron. And then the big man is hit from behind with a chair by Billy Gunn, who, of course, is at that point part of the Nightmare family. That sends Shaq on a rampage, which, you know, he gets Austin Gunn, gets Colton Gunn. And then gets QT Marshall as well. So lots of great moments of Shaq just being awesome.
Listen, Shaq, an instant babyface moment for Shaq because he attacks the ass boys. And anytime someone puts their hands on QT Marshall, even if Marshall or even if Marshall is in the right, I think people are going to start cheering that. Like, take off that bowling shirt, man. It's 2 a.m. Jeez.
I love that moment of chaos. And then, of course, it's capped off with Red Velvet hitting a big moonsault off the top rope to the outside. Great spot for Velvet, makes Shaq feel dangerous. And then the match goes up another level when Jade gets out those tables. We get a giant powerbomb from Shaq with a little signature with the Brody Lee sort of kiss, which was just such a nice touch.
Because
this is happening in March, you know, not that long after Brody Lee had died. And it's cool that Shaq even knew to do that. And then Cody tries to slam Shaq. As Michael Cole would say, he didn't quite get all of it.
Yeah, this was not the Hogan Andre slam that I think they wanted it to be. This was very much like, did Shaq go for a crossbody? And Cody was just like, I'll gingerly place you down onto the mat.
Shaq then does the big man, throws Cody off in the pinning attempt, which is fantastic. And then we get the final moments of the match where Velvet and Jade are sort of trading offense in the ring. Cody enters the ring to break up a pinfall attempt and then just charges at Shaq, throwing his whole body at him. Shaq standing on the apron in front of those tables. And we get to see the big man crash through the double tables with Cody Rhodes riding him all the way down. Back in the ring, Jade is just in complete shock at what's happened. You know, we're all in shock that this has happened as well. That gives Red Velvet the chance to hit a spear for a really close two. That's, of course, Brandi Rhodes' finisher, which is a nice little touch.
Commentary paid special attention to it, too. They're like, oh, she hit her with Brandi's finisher there.
Yep. And then Jade hits her finisher, the Jaded, to get the win. What did you think of the final moments of this match?
Final moments of this match are, And I want to use the term perfect in a sense of like this match ended right when the crowd probably had peaked in terms of excitement. So I feel like they didn't overstay their welcome and they nailed all of, I think from the Shaq powerbomb, it's just one of those things where each maneuver following one-ups it. Like Shaq hits the powerbomb, Cody hits his signature up punch. Hits the power slam, goes through the table. Jade and Velvet actually have a nice series of counters where it kind of looks like they're both going for a tombstone, but then they're able to reverse it out. And like you said, then Jade hits the Jaded. So I thought that this was the exact sequence that you wanted to end this match on. It was just excitement, excitement, excitement. It peaked to a crescendo, and then the match ended right when it was supposed to.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And, you know, it's really great. It was a fantastically minimalist performance from Cody Rhodes. He didn't even try and like tease a crossroads or any of his signature moves except for that up punch. He didn't try and do a Cody cutter. He knew that he wasn't the star in this match. He was the glue that would sort of hold sort of things together at different points. But he knew what his role was, and that was just to make Shaq look incredible and give people that moment. And then, of course, create the crescendo where Shaq goes through those tables. I did actually hear a story that wasn't necessarily what they'd originally planned, but they sort of pulled it on Shaq. And of course, once you've put it in front of him on the day, of course, he's not going to say no, because that's who he is. His ego will not allow him to say no to something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't
necessarily
what he agreed to originally.
I also heard the story. I don't know if it is true, but I could 100% believe Shaq being like,
very
wrestling
to do that.
Yeah, very wrestling, and also very of him to be like, well, if it's gonna help the show and help people enjoy it, like I will give the people what they want.
Yeah.
Obviously that's the one moment that I think did garner a little bit of the outside attention. You know, I know it got a little like kind of that op-ed in ESPN. It was a video that circulated and did well on social media. Just of Shaq going through the table specifically, because, you know, that's the big moment that you could send to TMZ and to all these other clips to be like, look what they're doing over here. They're sending Shaquille O'Neal through a table.
Yeah, I was actually, that was one of the questions I was going to ask, because, of course, these matches exist to draw eyeballs onto the product that don't normally view it. And it did pop a rating for Dynamite. It was over a million in a time when going over a million wasn't happening every single week. I'm not in the States, so you mentioned it got on ESPN. What was the traction like?
It wasn't huge traction. The thing about that is that ESPN, you know, will every now and then they'll still conduct like an interview with a WWE guy or an AEW guy, or, you know, have some type of op-ed writing about something that's going on in the world of pro wrestling. So that's not like as, I'd say, prominent as it probably used to be. That's not a knock on ESPN. I think that's just the way that we Americans ingest media now. So like did it do its job? Yes, it got them the better rating. Like it clearly showed that people did have some interest, even if you were I hate using the term casual viewer. If that wanted to make you, because I don't really believe there are any casual viewers anywhere anymore. I feel like we just like what we like at this point. But I do think that it did enough to, you know, garner the attention that it did. I never expected it to be blow away, like, oh, this will be on SportsCenter's top 10 moments, or like, you know, this is going to be replayed for years and years to come. I didn't never expect it to be like that level. I don't think anything is ever going to top like the addition of Mike Tyson, like in that Attitude Era of WWE when he was like this absolute killer in the boxing world. But I do think it did enough. It's kind of hard to answer the question. I feel like I'm swimming around and saying like, it did and also it didn't, but that's how I feel. Like I think that's all you can ask for, is to maybe get some, you know, big basketball fans being like, oh, a new wrestling promotion. Oh, a new wrestling promotion that Shaq was involved in. That's pretty cool.
Even just the idea of getting the name All Elite Wrestling out there so that people just even know what it is. Even if they don't watch anything, they just like, oh, there's a wrestling thing called All Elite Wrestling. And then next time they're thinking about wrestling, that might pop into their head. Who knows?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think, especially if you talk to, this is obviously a deeper conversation, but when you talk about, when you mention wrestling to people that aren't interested, I think their first instinct is to go, oh, you mean like WWE? I think we're starting to build to a point where people will be like, oh, like WWE, or I hear about this AEW thing. I think AEW has slowly started to engrave itself into popular culture, like being mentioned more in music. Like there's a lot of rappers that will reference AEW now, or a lot of other musicians that will reference it now. There was a moment on this TV show Black-ish where I think they talked about like a Wrestle Kingdom matchup. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like this is a major TV sitcom here in the States. And you're dropping in some New Japan like knowledge. Like,
that's a deep cut.
Yeah, it was a deep cut. Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, good for that. Good for them. So I do think that there is this like emergence, and we're slowly getting there, of AEW becoming more in the conversation in wrestling popular culture than just with hardcore, deep-rooted wrestling fans.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of course, back in the ring, back at Daly's place, it was a fantastic, it was a fantastic ending, I think, and getting that moment, of course, that's the moment, that's the pop culture moment. They aim for it, and I think they nailed it. I don't think they could have done anything more spectacular with, that would have been, you know, it would have been unsafe to do anything more. With someone who's not really trained as a wrestler, so
I think they
handled it perfectly.
But it's also that it's the big man idea, where like when you're that size, you know, it's always great to see a big man like your Keith Lee that's able to do all these incredibly agile things. And I love, and I don't want to detract from the big guys that can do that, you know, especially a guy like Big Show, who during his prime in WCW, like was fit enough to do a moonsault,
but was told
by Hogan, don't do that. You're a big man. So it's one of those things where it showed you that Shaq did all of those things particularly well. Used his power, used his size to get, and didn't have to do much. And the few moves that he did execute, the back body drop, the power bomb, looked great. And it's, you know, it's that, I think that celebrity thing where when, you know, a guy does a hip toss, oh, but it's this guy doing the hip toss. Look how much better it looks than these throws over here. Also, I have to give special mention, they have a Michael Myers moment here with Shaq, where Shaq gets like stretchered out from going through the table, and then they go back to look at him, and he's just gone. Oh, like, where did Shaq go? I have no idea. And we still don't know, because it's never been addressed.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah,
somewhere in Daly's place, like, there's just zombie Shaq roaming around, like, where's Cody? No one feels safe enough to tell him that Cody isn't around anymore, because they don't want Shaq to go on a Shaq rampage throughout Florida looking for him.
My thought was that it's very wrestling. What I think they did was they knew that they'd have people watching who may not have watched before, and I think they, like, tried to set up a hook for them that they thought, oh, if I keep watching, I might find out where Shaq's gone. Of course, they never had any intention of paying that off. It's very, like, very, very cardy thing to do. But I suspect that might be what they were trying to do there.
I 100%. I mean, it's very much a, oh, where is Shaq? I mean, listen, next week they should continue with the where is Shaq storyline. And maybe he's like deep in the Himalayas, like training for another matchup, just punching tree bark with his fingers and strangling Wolverines as he gets ready to make his run as aid. Listen, I also sillily said this, but, you know, I was one of those weird trollers that as soon as the match was over, I tweeted, like, guys, hear me out. TNT champion Shaquille O'Neal. Oh, like, give me a weak run. Just give me a weak run and just to see what happens. The Shaq Open Challenge. I mean, this writes itself, Sam. You know what I mean?
And I mean, it's possible with this ambulance that maybe just didn't fit into the ambulance.
Very much so.
I love the idea of the Shaq Open Challenge, actually. It does bring up my next question.
Yes.
We've had a few different celebrity involvements in AEW. This is probably the biggest one in terms of like celebrity and what, in terms of what they got a celebrity to do. We did have Mike Tyson show up. We had Snoop Dogg accompany Cody Rhodes. He did a frog splash.
Best frog splash you've ever seen. Move over, Eddie Guerrero. There's a new king of the splash. Yeah.
We had Rosario Dawson jumping the rail. Of course, at one point with the Malakai Black feud and the American Top Team shenanigans as well, which is kind of celebrity adjacent, I'd almost call it. Are there any other celebrities that you'd like to see in AEW, and like what are the chances, what would you book for them to do if they were to show up?
You know, I'm going to play this card because I am such a deep-rooted basketball fan. So I don't know if you would know this. So Shaq's show, NBA on TNT, features him and another NBA legend, Charles Barkley, who actually did a great interview recently where he praised Moxley for like taking that time to enter the alcohol treatment program. And it was actually like said some really nice things about like how he had someone that had been involved with alcohol, a brother, I believe, that couldn't get along, and, you know, revealed that he's this big wrestling fan, that he loves Moxley. And like he was obviously watching and was there when Shaq was promoting this tag team match. Charles Barkley is another guy that like he has such a personality and was a great player. Didn't win as many titles as Shaq did, which they consistently argue about on the show. So I'm waiting for, like, dare I say, I would love to see like a Shaq and Charles Barkley like tag team, just a one off.
Oh my gosh, that would be
to a point, because like they are just, you know, they are.
Would you put them against the Young Bucks?
I would put them against the Young Bucks. It's like this very weird, like, this is a silly comparison, but in terms of wrestling, it's like this Triple H Shawn Michaels friendship where like they love each other, but they, you know, they're going to push each other and butt heads to be the best. So like, even while, you know, you could sell this entire tag matches, can Shaq and Chuck coexist? Like, will this be able to work? But I just think that he's the type of guy too, because he's also a big guy. He also has such charm and such personality, and because he knows exactly who he is and isn't going to filter himself the same way Shaq does it, I think that could really translate well into the wrestling world. And I do think that it would be kind of fun to see that kind of go down. Even if they end up doing a Charles Barkley versus Shaq match on AEW, geez, where did we go? So I was going to say him. How about you? Would you have any other celebrities you would want to bring in?
Yeah, look, I was thinking, like, just wild pie in the sky, who are there people out there that they could try and potentially snag? You know, Tony Khan's got a lot of money, so maybe he could, you know, open loosen the purse strings a little bit. And of course, there are some that have been involved with WWE in the past, and I tried to avoid those. The guy that I settled on, and it's got a bit of an Aussie flavor to it because, of course, it does. The guy that I settled on that I thought would be incredible to see would be Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, because
think about it, like, he is hilarious, he's charismatic, he looks great, like he's well known for being someone who keeps himself in incredible shape. He played Thor. Like, I don't know, it's probably never gonna happen. I don't think it would ever happen.
Listen,
I don't
know if he's prayer a wrestling circle
fan or anything, but
prayer circle, let's let it happen. I mean, I think you probably know this too, but he was slotted to play Hulk Hogan in this Netflix movie about Hogan that may never see the light of day. Yes, he had been picked and had talked about
that would be brilliant casting, actually.
He had talked about putting on all this extra weight and like really or pounds, as I believe he refers to it, you know, trying to get to a certain weight limit to have the physique, which he said the training regimen to become Hulk Hogan was almost harder than his training regimen to become Thor. I don't know if this movie will ever see the light of day. It's one of those movies that has like lived in limbo, but also consistently gets like pretty good press about it. So I think Chris Hemsworth would be an excellent choice.
Yeah.
I think aside from his mainstream appeal from like the Avengers movie, I think he's a phenomenal actor. I think he's proven that he can be intense and hilarious at any chance that he's given it. You know, and you put him in the ring with put him in the ring with like a Marco stunt and let him throw in like 10 rows into the audience.
That would be fantastic.
I think people would eat that up.
I was thinking Team Taz, because I'd love to see the Taz promos, and of course he could mix it with Ricky Starks. Even if they wanted, they could put him against Powerhouse Hobbs. I'm not sure if you know what that would look like, or if he would be able to do that. But that's just my thought anyway.
you put Thor next to Hook, man. That's printing money on its own, because he could just be like, I don't know who this scrappy little fellow is here. He doesn't even say anything. All he does is eat chips, and then let them go at it for 60 minutes to a draw.
Now, just to contextualize this match historically, as I said, we've seen lots of other celebrity matches in the past. Where do you think this rates compared to other celebrity matches that have been going on out there in WWE particularly, but also I'm thinking like All In as well?
Yeah, I rank this pretty high. I mean, in my mind, again, there's probably some bias because I'm a big, you know, I love the NBA. I'm a big shot. I have two tattoos. I have a Michael Jordan I have three tattoos, but I have my Pentagon Cerro Miedo tattoo, and then I have my Michael Jordan tattoo. Basketball has been very important to me in my life. And it's been something that I follow as deeply as I follow pro wrestling. So there's my bias there. I've always loved Shaq. I've always loved Shaq as a performer and as an athlete. And I think he just did everything that he was supposed to do in sense of, you know, when you look at the match, as I, you know, we talked about the rating that it was given and the work rate and all those things. Mm. But what this match was supposed to do was build up Red Velvet and Jade Cargill and give us a big OMG moment. We got the big OMG moment. Like I said, Jade Cargill is very much a superstar now in the women's division, and Red Velvet is it continues to only rise from this occasion. So this job got everything done, which is why I would call it not only a success, but one of the better matches, because it achieved what it was supposed to. The same way that I would say that the Bad Bunny WrestleMania match last year achieved what it was supposed to, because it gave a great rub to Damian Priest, and it gave us some of these great OMG moments. You know, and there's been so many celebrities, like you said, celebrity matches and times that celebrities have gotten involved. But at what cost? Like, what did it actually help accomplish in the long run? There are times where a celebrity got involved and it didn't really do much, you know, in sense of telling the bigger story or giving the rub to somebody. So that's why I hold this celebrity match to a high bar, because it was as professional of a wrestling match as you can see from someone that's not in the industry.
Yeah, I sent out a Twitter thing last night, a tweet last night, and just said, what are your favorite celebrity wrestling matches? What are the best celebrity wrestling matches of all time? And there's a lot of love for Lawrence Taylor versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Headlined to WrestleMania. Thinking about headliners of WrestleMania, of course, you've also got Mr. T back in WrestleMania 1 tagging with Hulk Hogan against Roddy Piper.
Piper and Orndorff,
And, of course, you mentioned Bad Bunny versus Damian Priest. That seems to be the consensus pick for, like, best quality, whatever that means. But I'd also chuck in that category Stephen Amell versus Christopher Daniels. Young boy from Keeping It Strong Style rides for that one. The one that my, my personal pick, actually, I should also mention Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee. And depending when this one goes to air, this episode goes to air, we may see another Pat McAfee match as well. Against who knows who. My personal pick and my favorite is The Big Show versus Floyd Mayweather. It's almost like a role reversal of this match where Big Show is the big guy and you've just got this like annoying little mosquito. But I loved how they set it up with a sense of real life potential conflict in how they broke Big Show's nose. And man, what a thing for Show to give to Floyd Mayweather, like to allow him to do that to him. And then, of course, when they've got this actual match, you just want Show to be able to get his hands on this little fella. But this little guy is so slippery and has so many goons and is so cunning that he's able to avoid Show for the majority of the match. So I love that match personally.
I love that match too. I think it's a great example of the celebrity bringing a great example of celebrity bringing so many extra eyes. Now, yes, that's a WrestleMania compared to the Shaq match, which is just on an episode of TV. But I think people really will overlook how prominent that Show angle was with Floyd Mayweather, and how especially that was at a point when Floyd Mayweather was, you know, probably in his peak popularity in the in the boxing world, because he was still competing, still undefeated, retired undefeated eventually. Or aside from his weird exhibition bout with Logan Paul, which doesn't count. Nothing the Paul brothers do counts. But it's just that sense of like that, that was another thing where the job was successfully done in terms of what it was supposed to do. And there, you know, the Mr. T from WrestleMania 1 is great. I think WrestleMania 2, we may have bit off more than we can chew when he was working with Piper in that one. Because that was not like one of the better celebrity showings. But as long as it gets the job done, you know, as long as it does what it set out to do. And I understand why Show wants to have this match with Shaq, and hopefully it happens now under the AEW banner, because I do think that those two could spark magic from each other. I do think seeing the way Shaq worked, I think he'll easily fit into Paul White's wheelhouse, where they could just trade slaps for 5 minutes. And I think people will be pretty entertained by these two big, thick, hunky meat boys just trading back a few slapjacks. The LT match, I grew up in New York. I'm a big New York Giants fan. Lawrence Taylor is like the god of New York Giants fans. I always thought that that match against Bam Bam Bigelow was wonderful. I'm going to be one of those wrestling fans that's like, well, I still feel like they should have had one of their guys probably be in the main event of WrestleMania. But, you know, Lawrence Taylor is one of those guys who was bigger than the sport of football and at that time was bigger than the sport of wrestling. So I understand why you throw him that bone and let him headline your bigger show.
Absolutely. Now, last thing, I think we've agreed this is a fantastic, is a triumph of performance from all four people involved this match. You've got that, as I said, that minimalistic performance from Cody being the glue. You've got Jade who is set up to steal the show, and it's almost like a rug pull. It's like, we'll get people here for Shaq, but we're actually here for Jade. And then of course you've got Red Velvet looking to just grab off all that she can. And she, I wouldn't say she steals the show, but she asserts herself in it. And I came out of this match thinking, man, Red Velvet and Jade Cargill, they could be career rivals after this. You know, in 4 years' time, when Jade's running rampant over the top of the women's division as AEW champion at some point, putting her against Red Velvet, they've got a lot of history to go back on now. But one thing I wanted to say, just to contextualize this as well within the full history of AEW, was this was kind of the first example we got of Cody Rhodes really being off in a world of his own. Of course, he would go to be part of the Revolution ladder match in the week after this one. But this was really him off in his own world in what became known as the Codyverse. And given that that's the first, this is the first real example of that. Of course, this comes after his second TNT title run. You know, he's not interacting with other stars. He's sort of doing his own thing. It's not really in the wheelhouse of what AEW's done before. What were your thoughts on Cody Rhodes in 2021 in AEW?
I mean, listen, I love Cody Rhodes. You know, this company doesn't exist without his leadership and without his charisma and without his star drawing ability that he built very much up on his own after leaving WWE in 2016. I have this constant argument with myself where I don't know if Cody is a genius or sometimes or sometimes falling upwards, because there seems so many points where he is very plugged into what the people want. I don't understand why, you know, and I think that it was very brave of him, very noble of him to do this angle where he takes himself out of the world title picture. 100% understand. I still don't understand why that means he took himself away from marquee matchups and marquee feuds that people would 100% want to see. But there just seemed to be a sense of, you know, I talked about reaching the peak and being able to unplug from something. In my eyes, that Malakai Black feud peaked after Black beat him the second time. Cody tried the second time, couldn't do it. That third match where he gets his win back didn't really do anything for me, and I don't really think it did anything for Cody, and I don't really think it did anything for Black. I liked Cody winning back the TNT title and then dropping again to Guevara. Like, I thought that was good, and he did a great job at elevating that. But I don't know what the long plan there was, you know, like, it was it just to give him another accolade to be the first and only three-time champion in the promotion? It leaves me with more questions rather than I'm enjoying what you're doing, because he, I think he still, you know, knows how to tell a story in a ring. He does a great, you know, he really, really did such a fantastic job in this tag match at being able to step aside and let all these other people shine while also getting his own moments. But there's just a lot of questionable things about Cody that as a fan, as someone that has supported him and has even spoken to him during press scrums, who's always been very kind to the wrestling press and has always been very well versed and, you know, very down to earth in being able to talk to you about this beautiful sport. It still leaves me like, you know, I don't want to say uninterested, but uneasy. Like, there's so many things I'm sure you could agree. There were so many times where it felt like Cody was on track to being able to change certain perceptions of what a heel babyface tweener was. And again, I thought it was some brilliant work with the way that he would dress up like one of the characters from The Boys, who also has this weird conception of what he is in this storyline. Again, I'm like, Cody is either five paces ahead or he's playing Battleship and everyone else is playing chess. It's rather frustrating. But I was admittingly going to say that I haven't missed him since he's been gone now. That doesn't mean I wouldn't love to see Cody jump in and start feuding with some big names. You know, he did this Here's an example, if we have the time to talk about it really quick. He does this big promo before the Guevara ladder match where he talks about CM Punk and he talks about how he became all the things that Punk said he was going to become and all this. But it didn't really make sense to me. This promo got like both a lot of praise and a lot of flack. And I was more on the side with flack where like I don't know what direction you're trying to face. Like you keep trying to shoot all of these rockets out, but I don't know how this is telling like a linear storyline in your character build. Like it's all over the place. And that's how I felt. That's how I felt about Cody in 2021 was it was very scattered, very all over the place. Very points of, wow, this dude is a megastar to this dude is kind of not reading the room correctly.
Yeah, that sums up my thoughts as well. Like sometimes in 2021, I was just like, mate, what are you doing? What's going on here? You know, I thought he would have been a fantastic. For some reason, he never interacted with the top guys after that program with Jericho. Like I thought he would have been the perfect opponent for Hangman to get him psyched up for or get him ready to face Kenny again because they've got so much history. There's history with the Elite. He would have been but Cody was, as I said, off in the Codyverse, not interacting with the other stars. And yeah, as you said, that program, that promo you mentioned, it was like he was trying to, I mean, and it's possible he was trying to like remind TK because they're in negotiations at that point.
Right.
TK about like what money there is on the table if he stays around. But you know, doing that while you're supposedly in a feud with Sammy Guevara, it's like you're just aiming it too much at some points. But at other points, you know, you're like, wow, what he's doing is brilliant. The first Malakai Black match, that was so good. And it felt, I was like, oh, Cody's back. Cody, return to form for Cody. We're back on the road again. The ship's righted after that weird, you know, that weird period. But the proof is in the pudding, really, that like that he hasn't been missed on Dynamite since he left. You know, they had their two biggest pay-per-views of all time, All Out last year, and now Revolution 2022, no Cody match.
No Cody match. There's also been like a comforting pace to Dynamite now because sometimes his things would come in and feel so disjointed that it sort of messed up the flow of what the show was. And I feel like they haven't really had that issue since he's been gone. And that's not to say I hope he doesn't come back or I hope
God no.
You know, or I hope that, or I don't still see value in him in AEW, but it really does, you know, like you said, the proof is in the pudding and I love pudding, but this pudding has been this pudding has been tasting a lot creamier and a lot less crunchy since he is, unplugged himself from his weird Cody verses.
Yeah, look, Joey, that's all the questions I've got for you. I do appreciate your time here today. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about this match, about the Shaq and Jade Cargill versus Cody and Brandi Rhodes? Cody and Red Velvet before we get going today.
Before we get going, Sam, I just want to thank you so much for having me on the show. It's one of my favorite pro wrestling podcasts that's out there right now. I look forward because there's just going to be tons and tons more of fantastic AEW matches and storylines that we'll get to sink our teeth into. So thank you not only that, but for also indulging me when I said I'd love to talk about this Shaq match. I'm just going to repeat myself. We have to remember that as great of storytellers that AEW are and as emotionally resonant as sometimes their characters can be, you know, like I mentioned, Eddie Kingston, like this dude could bring a tear to your eye at any moment because he is just so real. He is the basis of what makes pro wrestling great, whereas, you know, people say it's scripted and it's fake. Yes, obviously, schmucks, we know that. Same thing with Game of Thrones. But also, there's nothing fake about going into an arena full of people and them cheering you and wanting you to win. There's nothing fake about that. That connection is real. With that said, sometimes we have to remember that this is a silly, silly business that's supposed to be fun. And when I think about the fun aspects of pro wrestling, I thought about this matchup. And I thought about what makes wrestling great and fun, and it's things like this. Thank you again for letting me just talk about this. And again, TNT champion Shaq, it's going to happen. It will happen. It should happen.
Bring it on.
Okay, there's too much, you know, we talk about Hobbs and Wardlow and Keith Lee. Man, if Shaq was in that Face of the Revolution ladder match, nothing's following it.
Six seconds. Needed a ladder to get that thing down.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, exactly.
Just jump.
I'm still hoping for the Shaq ricochet spot where he like bounces off the ropes and does an 840, lands directly on his feet, and then sings in a higher pitch than Keith Lee does. I know he's got it in you, Shaq. You bring it out, Diesel.
And Joey, where can the good people find you?
Hey, man, you could find all of my coverage and interviews at Wrestling Headlines and WrestlingHeadlines.com or the Wrestling Headlines YouTube channel. I just spoke with the champ, the virtuosa, Deonna Purrazzo. We had a great conversation there, so please check that out. And please continue to listen to my man Sam's Match Guide podcast, because it is one of the very, very best.
Cheers. Thank you so much, Joey. As the good people know, you can find me on Twitter, Sir_Samuel. If you want to talk about this match, tell us what your favorite celebrity matches are and why, and tell us what you thought of this match as well. Thank you very much for spending this time with me, Joey, and thank you to the good people out there for listening. I really appreciate it. And of course, you can catch this podcast every week here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. If you enjoy what you've listened to, you can rate and review it. We'd really appreciate if you did that. That really helps out other people being able to find the podcast. And if you do like what we do, you can support us. You can donate to us on redcircle.com.au. There'll be a link in the description of the podcast if you'd like to do that. You can do a one-time donation or set it up for a regular donation if you want to. And that just helps us, you know, pay for hosting, pay for equipment, all those sorts of things. It's nothing that's, you know, really, you know, buying Lamborghinis for us or anything like that, unfortunately. Maybe down the line, who knows, if we get this thing pumping hard enough. But look, as I said, thank you, Joey, for your time today, and thank you for listening. Can't wait to see you all again next week on the AW Match Guide podcast. See you then. Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.